I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Eva Stashniak joins me now. The internationally acclaimed best-selling author has a new book out, Empress of the Night, a follow-up to The Winter Palace. I'll ask Ms. Stashniak about this book, where Catherine the Great is when this book opens, her loves, and the Russia she commands, the character of Varvara and what she illuminates, as well as the reaction to these books. Eva Stashniak was born in Poland but came to Canada in 1981. She worked for Radio Canada International and Sheridan College. Her other two books are Necessary Lies and Garden of Venus. Visit evastashniak.com for more information. The book is published by Doubleday. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program Eva Stashniak. Ms. Stashniak, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So when the book begins, how do we see Catherine? I guess she's near death, right?
Yes. I wanted to tell the story of her whole life in the second book on Catherine. This is the book written from her point of view. And the moment of her death, or just the last days, 2 days before her death, is the time where I wanted to start, because, first of all, her whole life led to this moment, but also this is the moment in which, after very many years, she's again powerless. The absolute ruler of Russia is paralyzed. She cannot speak. She cannot move. But I think that from what we know about the stroke, I'm quite sure that she was able to process and to understand a lot of what was happening at that time. And for a novelist, that's a very, very interesting place to be.
And so, I guess the first book would have been just as she was crowned, and then this book takes us from, say, that
point. That's true, but the first book was not written from Catherine's point of view. It was the point of view of Varvara, the spy, the palace spy, the confidant. So you got a different take on Catherine. Varvara was a friend. She was also a political supporter. She was someone, in a sense, in love with Catherine, with the idea of this new ruler who can change Russia. And such narrators are not entirely reliable. I think that the view of that person that they describe is colored by their expectations. So in Empress of the Night, if we revisit the time described in the Winter Palace, we see it from Catherine's point of view.
And so Varvara does play a big part in this book as well, right?
Well, she not as big as in the Winter Palace, because when you think about it, for Catherine, Varvara was never as important as Catherine was for Varvara. But she is there, and she comes back a few times in Catherine's thoughts, and we know what happened to her. But she's more significant in her absence, because we know how much she projected herself into Catherine's life. And suddenly, when Catherine thinks about the same time, her perception of this time is very different.
Now, you've been fascinated with Catherine for a long time, right?
That's true.
Yeah, no, she is an important figure, and we see that in the number of books about her in recent years. She was powerful and she was important. Why should we know her?
I am, you know, I come from the tradition, cultural tradition, where history is extremely important. You know, for me, history is where we have been and what brought me to this moment. And Catherine is part of that tradition. I think that the history of Eastern Europe, history of Russia, of Poland, any place behind what used to be called the Iron Curtain, has been determined by Catherine's reign. So if you look at her from this point of view, even the current news, even the annexation of Crimea, touches on Catherine the Great and her politics and her role in forming Russia. Of course, the whole Russian Revolution, the rule of communists, the fate of the last Tsar, that's all the consequence of her role and of the decisions. Or, if not the consequences of what she did, the consequences of what she did not do, of what she did not secure. So, for me, the answer is because we are connected, you know, because what happens right now somehow originated at the time of her reign as well.
Now, what was the, it's one thing for a woman to be the empress at the time, one thing for Catherine to be there, but what was the lot of women in the country itself? I mean, were they in positions of influence or power as well?
The Russian women in the 18th century were in a fairly interesting position. Peter the Great, about, 35 years before Catherine arrived in Russia, so we are talking about fairly recent history for her. Mm. When Peter the Great was reigning Russia, when he sort of took power, women were really relegated to the inner chambers of the house. They never appeared in public. They were secluded. They would not talk to any man who wasn't a brother, husband, father, relative. Pete the Great changed that single-handedly. After his trip to the West, he came back to Russia and said, that's it. You know, Russian women have to get out of their secluded positions. And they did. And they it wasn't something that they liked doing at first. But by the time Catherine arrives, the Russian women are, actually, they have more rights, legal rights, than Western women at the same time. And that's by... the reason for it is that Peter the Great did not really investigate the kind of rights Western women had, and he wanted to westernize Russia, and he gave women, Russian women, power to inherit property, to rule, to govern property without the husband's permission. So things that Western women had to fight for a long time. So in fact, a lot of women had a fairly different, sort of elevated position in comparison to their grandmothers or mothers. Also, Catherine the Great did quite a bit because she, believing in education, she really wanted to educate Russian women, and not just noble women, but also women of merchant class and peasant women. She believed that women bring up the next generation, and if she wanted to change the Russian society, she had to give the women the power to do it, and that education is the only way. So that was a pocket, a window in history. That changed afterwards, but at that time, Russian women had, enjoyed quite an interesting position, and I would say that they were more free at that time than they were in Western Europe in many ways.
And Catherine herself was quite enlightened. She was she wrote a lot in the sort as well, right?
Yes, she wrote, she read, she wrote not only her memoirs, but articles, plays, wrote articles, like a journalist. She wrote polemical pieces. She wrote books for children. She also reformed the Russian legal system, started schools, hospitals. So, yes, she was very much the soul of the Enlightenment. The only problem with that is the actual French Revolution, because when that happened, Catherine had second thoughts about the ideas of the Enlightenment. You know, there's these scenes at the Winter Palace where the busts of Voltaire are removed and sent into the attic, because she just felt that the ideas of the Enlightenment were betrayed the moment the guillotines were in operation in Paris. So in the last several years of her life, she sort of goes retrieved and stops believing that much in the power of these enlightened positions. But for many, many years, that was her philosophy, and that's what she wanted. She wanted Russia to be an enlightened society, and she succeeded in many ways. Not everywhere, but she did succeed.
Now, this is a novel, but in the course of your research, I understand you did a lot of research for the two books. Did you find that there was a lot documented, that there was a lot kept? I mean, was there stuff lost because of, say, this Soviet era, from the Soviet era?
That's actually a very interesting question, because in Russia, under the communists, Catherine the Great was not a legitimate topic of research at all. In fact, for the communists, the only Tsar who had any measure of respect was Peter the Great. And then, the women of the 18th century, and there were several Tsarinas at that point, were dismissed as women, and the boy, in the clothes and men. And then, of course, the rest of the Romanovs were always portrayed as destroyers of Russia, criminals who deserved to be shot. So the scholarship really bypassed Catherine. There was really very, very little about her. Whatever was done in the West. The Western departments of Russian history and Russian literature studied Catherine the Great, and the greatest experts, in fact, on Catherine the Great are Western scholars. It's only after the Perestroika that the Russian scholars are sort of joining, and they said that, now they have access to 18th century documents and sources that were hidden for so many years. And, we don't have it yet, but I think that in a few years we'll have a seminal biography of Catherine the Great based on these new sources coming from Russia. And it will be a fascinating read, and maybe we'll have to re-examine our position and our view of her, though I think that we are pretty accurate in many ways. But it would be, I'm very much looking forward to reading it.
Now, you've written these two books on Catherine, the reimaginings of her. What do you think you get out of fiction that you wouldn't get, say, if you embarked on a seminal biography of Catherine?
Yes, I think that what the biography does best is to give you the facts of the whole life. You know, a biography is very well documented, a good biography. It covers all aspects of the subject's life. So you would, the biographer doesn't have the freedom to choose certain pivotal moments and concentrate on those, but has to cover every part of that life. And I think that's what a good biography does. So, and a novel will never do that. I mean, a novel is a literary portrait. It's a recreation. It's sort of an invitation to the reader to come with me and witness and experience something. You know, so in the Winter Palace, you could experience, it could be one of the entourage of Catherine the Great and watch her race from this 14-year-old young woman who is powerless and rise to power and watch her from the outside. In Empress of the Night, I still take you into her boudoir and into her study, and you can stand beside her and watch her make political decisions, private decisions, and get some insight into what kind of a woman she was and what went through her head and her heart, and perhaps get an insight into Russia, into the Russia, the Catherinian Russia, her Russia, that we still inherit in some ways. It's still there. And I think that the novel does that best. It allows you to experience the world, while a biography teaches you about it and gives you the facts. It's like a history lesson and a recreation.
Yeah. Did you find, though, that in the course of writing fiction that you still learn a great deal about her?
Of course. Of course I do, yes. And I think that even writing these two novels, you know, the outside versus inside look, I changed quite a bit because it's, you know, facts, but if you try to imagine yourself living through these facts, you know, like a decision to, for example, a discussion with your grandson about the future of Russia. You know, if you actually try to imagine that conversation, imagine what can be said. I mean, what the ideas come from the sources. You know what she thought. We know what he thought. But if you try to recreate it, you learn a lot about who these people were and their own entrapments and their own little games. And I find it absolutely fascinating to be able to do that because it's the understanding of the human nature. I think as a, you know, psychology is my other passion, you know, apart from history. And I think that allows me to join this too, you know, to actually look into the character's soul and try to recreate that and to see. And that is always a lesson, a new lesson, a new way of looking at it.
And as you've said already, we can learn about the Russia of today, say, or where Russia's headed.
Yes,
I think looking back.
I think so. I think we do, even though, you know, it was just, you know, the Crimea is on everybody's mind at the moment. And yes, you know, Catherine the Great and Potemkin were, you know, they annexed Crimea to Russia. Of course, their policy towards Crimea was not Stalin's policy. I mean, they did not practice ethnic cleansing of the peninsula. They were not responsible for bringing ethnic Russians to replace the ethnic population. So there is a big difference. I mean, Russia after Catherine went through a period of very often very destructive policy. But the beginning is that it was Pete the Great and Catherine's vision that Russia needs to expand south, that it needs a warm water port, and that it needs that land, and that also that Russia as an empire can absorb other nations and other cultures. You know, I remember reading her letters to Potemkin about Crimea and telling him, please make sure that we respect the religion and the culture of the Crimean Tatars. You know, we will have a substantial Muslim population that will be part of our Russia now. You know, that was her thinking in the 18th century, very forward-looking in many ways, you know, even though it was not followed by her descendants and later on by the communist Russia, but that was her intention.
And the fact that she came from, so she wasn't Russian, she wasn't Russian born. Do you think that added to, say, her outward lookingness, if you will?
I think it did. I myself am an immigrant, so I know that how important it is to, you know, when you always have that other version of reality in your mind, you know, that nothing is absolute, you know, and you don't, you never have that sense of the things have to be that way, because you remember them being in a different way. You don't necessarily want to return to how they were, but you're always aware that there is this other possibility. And she had that sense of Western Europe and understood Western Europe, and at the same time, really truly understood Russia. You know, she spent a lot of time learning about Russia. She was not, she was never ready to dismiss her country in any way. I mean, even if she was frustrated by a lot of things, it was for her, that was it. That was her country, and yet, because of her experience of the Western Europe, she was able to introduce changes that I think, had they been followed through by her descendants, would have created maybe a very different Russia. Maybe we wouldn't have had a revolution at all. I don't think it was necessary.
How did she react to power? Was power something that she sought or that she actively wanted to cultivate? Like, say, I mean, that's what we think of, say, men, if you will, in power and in leadership roles.
Yes.
Was she the same or different?
Yes, well, she wanted, you know, she said a couple of things. I mean, one of her letters when she was the Grand Duchess, she wrote, "I shall either rule or perish." You know, she was in her 20s at that time, and that was that important. You know, it was power or death. However, when she had power, you know, and she had absolute power because that was the structure of the Russian society. I think there were a couple of things. First of all, she never made any personal decision in political matters. You know, she may have loved someone, but when it came to politics, she suspended personal feelings and personal. So power was extremely important. But that power was also used in a wise way. I mean, she said at some point that, you know, I am an absolute ruler, but I am limited by the nature of my subjects. There's no point for an absolute ruler to say, go to the moon and fetch me something. You know, that's impossible. So I cannot ask the impossible. I have to, I can use my power only in such a way that I can make things possible, and then I can ask for them. So I think she was, in that sense, her sense of power was tempered by that attitude. But yes, she was a very political being and a very talented politician.
Now, the reactions to your books, the Winter Palace and now Empress of the Night, they've been quite good. They've sold a lot of copies. What's that like in terms of bringing a story like Catherine's to a contemporary audience? I mean, you're also seeing a great interest in television shows like Game of Thrones
and
The Tudors and the sort.
For me, it's very rewarding because history was always what my passion, as I said, history and psychology. But I also like the fact that that it's not on the Tudor England or, you know, the history of France, of Italy, or, you know, or India. You know, the kind of traditional parts related to either to the British Empire or to the Western Europe, that there's more and more interest of the other Europe. You know, I always had the sense, you know, when I arrived in Canada in 1981, I always had the sense that the stories from behind the Iron Curtain were stopped, you know, that there were all these fascinating characters, and nobody was telling these stories. So for me, it's a kind of a personal satisfaction that I am able to bring these stories and tell them in English here, and they go back to Poland, you know, and they sort of become more international and universal. So it's a great sense of satisfaction. Also the sense of, you know, like I told you that these were fascinating stories, and I'm glad that you're listening, you know, so that's my feeling about that.
And you're working on a new novel now?
Yes, I'm working on a new novel.
Can you tell us about where it's set, say?
Yes, it still has a connection to Russia, even though not so much to the Romanov court. It is set in the years from 1900 to 1939, so it will cover the Russian Revolution and the wave of exiles that had to leave Russia. And on the one hand, these are the aristocrats, the former people, so-called, the descendants of Catherine, who are totally lost the moment they lose their riches, and they really cannot do much with their lives. But also there are the imperial artists, and they are far more better to cope. You know, you have dancers, you have who actually bring Russia to the West. You have ballerines, and these are my characters. You know, they are from the artists, and they rub shoulders with former aristocrats, but they they still link the East and West, you know, and they start the craze of about Russia and Paris from 1906 to 1914, and then after that, after the revolution, they also try to integrate that East and West on that side of the border. So these are my characters, the dancers from the Imperial Theater, and I found Polish dancers, I mean ethnically Polish, who were brought up in Russia, you know, especially Bronisława Nijinska, the sister of Wacław Nijinski, the famous god of dance.
Yeah.
And she's absolutely fascinating for me because she was a marvelous dancer herself and choreographer. She was ethnically Polish, but she was brought up in Russia. And she lived, you know, a lot of her life in Paris and in London and then in the States, but that's later story. So this is where my novel is happening, on the you know, among these people.
Well, until then, we'll certainly read Empress of the Night because it just sounds like a fascinating book.
Thank you.
Congratulations on this book and continued good luck with it. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you so much.
The website for evastashniak.com. The book is called Empress of the Night. It's from Doubleday. It's author Eva Stashniak. Joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.